Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to The Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. I'm Marcello Rolando. The mission of The Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal opportunity. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing the creative artist and political unity as solutions to our challenges. Welcome to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, and my guest today is film director Sanjay Rawal. Welcome to the show. Let's tell the people a little bit about you. You're the founder of the strategic advisory firm Illumin Group, as well as the associated firm Illumin Productions. You've directed award-winning documentaries like Challenging Impossibility and Ocean Monk. But we want to talk today about your feature-length documentary, Food Chains. It's a film by Illumin and Two Moons and opens nationally on Friday, November 21st. So welcome, Sanjay. How are you doing?
Well, thank you very much for having me, Marcello, and I'm doing great. I can't wait to get into these issues with you.
And issues is exactly the word. As Americans, we don't know much about how our clothes and food or even our toys and utility power get from their source to us and our homes. I think Food Chains, the documentary, your documentary, certainly addresses that. So let's tackle the food chain, if you will, from farm makers to big supermarket corporations like Publix and Kroger and Safeway, as you reveal them in your documentary Food Chains. Where do we start?
Well, there's a million different places to start.
Yeah.
But I really liked how you kind of addressed the fact that the United States are primarily a society of consumption.
Yes.
When there are bad things that are happening, our past presidents have told us to go out and shop.
Yes, yes.
That's like the cure for all of our mental illnesses. But that said, although our economy runs on consumption, as Americans, we know surprisingly little about where our goods come from.
Mm.
And it's no more apparent than in our food system.
Yes.
You know, the majority of the millions upon millions of tons of fresh fruits and vegetables that we eat each day, they're all picked by hand. I mean,
yes.
Very little is machine harvested.
Mm.
And the people that pick those fruits and vegetables are amongst the poorest and most exploited workers in the country.
You know, I've seen the film, and not only is it a great creative artistic work, but its content, its detail, its specifics was so alarming. I just wept by the end of it. But Food Chains features tomato farmers in Immokalee, Florida. I lived in Florida for 5 years in West Palm Beach, and I have to say I'd never heard of Immokalee, but we're going to hear about it today because Food Chains tells us about the denial of the humanity of those who provide Americans with our daily bread, our daily needs. It's a dirty little secret, I think, and I'm glad Food Chains has come along to expose that secret. And just like Ferguson and Bangladesh clothing sweatshops, it's not just a problem with one city or even one state. This is pretty prevalent, yes?
I mean, it's true. Like, farm workers in the United States have historically been the subject of abuse. I mean, our first farm workers in industrialized agriculture were brought as slaves from Africa.
Yes.
And we've seen wave after wave of immigrant populations from Chinese and Japanese to now Latinos with a very brief period in the late 20s and 30s, the Dust Bowl migrants from Oklahoma, predominantly Caucasian, but still, you know, on the kind of lower end of the demographic ladder. There's always been abuse because the people that have worked have always been desperate for money.
Yes.
But that said, you know, our story and our film, as you know, is one of hope. Because these tomato pickers from probably one of the most historically oppressive agricultural regions of America, Southern Florida, have developed a program that has turned the entire food chain upside down.
Yes.
And for the first time in really modern history, has given workers a seat at the table at the very, very top.
Yes.
These workers, the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, or CIW, realize that farmers don't have any profit left. There's no wiggle room for farmers to pay workers more, even if they wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
Workers realize that large buyers of fresh fruits and vegetables and tomatoes, like Walmart, Trader Joe's, Whole Foods, McDonald's, these guys control the system.
Yes.
And the CIW made them, through consumer pressure, pay an extra penny more per pound, which doubled wages, and refused to buy from farms with human rights violations. So in one fell swoop, the tomato pickers of Florida are now being lifted out of poverty, and they're working in an atmosphere where there is no rape, there is no modern-day slavery, there is no, you know, rampant sexual harassment, physical abuse, psychological abuse. They've finally been lifted out of the shadows, so to speak.
All I ever hear from anyone, eat fresh fruits and vegetables. You know, that's the healthy way to live, but it's not healthy for the people who are actually picking those fruits and vegetables, as you said. I mean, as far back as in the 1960s, Edward R. Murrow did a harvest of shame, and Robert Kennedy, as we recall, had to get involved in stopping a hunger strike by the farm workers. But those who pick tomatoes in Florida, they live 15 to 16 people in a trailer after they work, 12, 14 hour days? And one other thing I want to mention, which you did touch on already, the food chain that is exposed in Food Chains, the movie, the food chain doesn't stop with those who are in the field picking the food, or even the farmer who owns the farm where the food is being grown. The food chain, we discover, stops at the top of food corporations, agriculture corporations, supermarkets. So let's break down what's happening. 1 penny more per pound. Can you explain that phrase, 1 penny more per pound, and then we'll go forward?
Absolutely. Let's start from the top.
Yes.
The supermarkets are gigantic corporations, bigger than most people would realize. The second largest supermarket in this country, Kroger,
yes,
had more gross revenue than Google and Microsoft combined.
Wow.
People will argue that the profit margins aren't the same, and that's true, but Kroger is still making billions of dollars a year in profit, and the majority of those profits are from what the products that are around the outside of the store, like fruits and vegetables,
yes,
like meat and dairy. But it's really produce, fruits and vegetables, that make the majority of their profit.
Yes.
At the very bottom of the supply chain, you pass through the farm level, the distributor level, you're at the very bottom, workers are paid pennies on the dollar.
Mm.
So if you're buying an average tomato in a supermarket, it might be $1.99 or $2.99 a pound.
Mm.
The workers are generally getting only about a penny or so per pound.
Wow.
At the same time, because of that poverty and the desperation for work, the workers are, and this is across America, they're willing to put up with a lot of stuff that you and I wouldn't put up with.
Yes.
So the conditions in the field generally are horrific.
Mm.
And at the worst end of the spectrum, you have an incredibly high prevalence compared to other jobs of sexual harassment.
Yes.
You have the existence of modern-day slavery, which you don't, and that's when people are not paid, they're confined on pain of death.
Yes.
In the United States, you don't see that in many other sectors, but that's because of the poverty. So in Florida, the farm workers in the tomato industry began working with farmers to put together this novel program that's really overseen by supermarkets, let's say.
Uh-huh.
Supermarkets ensure that wages for farm workers are living wages, because they subsidize by paying an extra penny per pound for Florida tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And they ensure that farms are all in compliance with the code of conduct, because if farmers break the code of conduct, they can no longer sell to these gigantic buyers. So there's an economic incentive for the farming system to weed out the people that would ordinarily treat workers like machines.
Yes.
So we've seen one of the most historically oppressive regions in the country become the most progressive. And that's happened in the last few years.
Uh-huh.
There was a fantastic book by Barry Petterbrook, a former contributing journalist to Gourmet magazine, called Tomato Land.
Yes.
Tomato Land, it goes into the historic exploitation of farm workers up until really 2010.
Yes.
And that's really where our movie starts. Our movie starts with this miraculous transformation of this industry, to the point where these workers were even able to convince Walmart
yes.
to sign on to this agreement. And Walmart isn't historically labor-friendly.
Yes,
yet
it's true.
These workers created a value proposition, an argument for Walmart to understand that they had to invest in the labor at the bottom of their supply chain. That's where the penny per pound comes from.
Yes.
To raise the wages by a penny per pound.
I believe it was Food Nation author Eric Schlosser who said in your documentary, Food Chains, that this isn't one of the most challenging economic problems of our era. It's so simple, a penny a pound. Just add a penny a pound and you double the wages of a farmer. And I believe the figure put on that, for instance, for Publix, it would only cost Publix $1 million and they make billions.
People might not know outside of Florida, Publix is one of the largest supermarket chains in the country, you know, top five or six,
yes.
but it's concentrated in Florida.
Yes.
And you can't avoid shopping at Publix. That said, Publix is one of the main holdouts. They refuse to sign this fair food program.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. Kroger, Safeway, Publix, the fast food chain Wendy's, they're all adamant holdout, meaning that they're not willing to pay an extra penny per pound, and more kind of more horrifically, they refuse to support this code of conduct, which
yes.
eradicates these just mind-bogglingly oppressive practices out of farm labor. So Publix, you know, has stood strongly against the rights of farm workers. And it's shocking in this day and age that a company can still be as ignorant as
yeah.
they are.
Yes. Ignorant is the word, because this is not an outrageous demand. These are not violent people. It's very much in keeping in the creative nonviolence of Martin Luther King and others. It's reasonable. It's logical that we recognize the human rights at both ends of the spectrum. And Publix and other Kroger, they have so little to lose. And as you say, if Walmart can get on, everyone should. But I want to stress again, we're talking about the campaign for fair food, the Fair Food Program. And I want to go back to a part of the question I asked. These farm workers are paid so little and sometimes cannot afford to feed themselves while they're picking the food for us. Is that not true?
It's absolutely true. The average salary of a farm worker in the United States working full time is about $12,000 or $13,000 a year.
Mm.
And these are people that really subsidize the profits of multi-billion-dollar corporations. I mean, Walmart is a grocery store. We might not think of it that way, but 3/4 of its revenue comes from groceries.
Yes.
And one-third of all the groceries purchased in this country are purchased by people at Walmart.
Mm.
I mean, these corporations are massive. At the same time, they're still built on the economics of the 19th century
yes.
for the most part. But I should say, companies like Walmart, like Whole Foods, like Trader Joe's, almost every fast food chain except Wendy's, are places where you can be guaranteed that at least the tomatoes that you're eating have been picked ethically. This Fair Food Program, it's just in tomatoes. I mean, that's the thing that shows how much work we still have yet to do.
Yes.
The only product in the United States that you can be guaranteed beyond a shadow of a doubt was picked by a farm worker under just humane conditions is the Fair Food Program. There's other little tiny ones around the country, nothing on the scale of the CIW Fair Food Program.
Well, like you say, it is to see their progress, although it's taken years, although many migrant workers still live 15 to 16 people in a trailer, in one trailer, while the rest of us feast on their labors, of course, and corporations make millions upon millions from their cheap labor, at least for the tomato pickers, that has changed. But there are other products, even wine, yes, grapes.
In the film, we look at Napa Valley. We look at one of the most progressive, politically progressive agricultural regions in the country, and certainly one of the richest agricultural regions in the country. And the same issues exist there. I mean, true, farm workers are paid more in Napa, but the cost of living is 2, 3, 4 times higher than almost any other rural agricultural area in America. So these problems are ubiquitous in this country. But as Eric Schlosser said, the economics aren't insurmountable. Healthcare might be insurmountable. The mortgage crisis might be insurmountable.
Yes.
But a couple pennies per pound across the board. Now, we calculated that if the average American family of four were to pay enough money so that every farm worker in this country could have a living wage, that would cost a family of four about $65 extra per year. That's 20 cents extra on our fresh fruits and vegetables per day to ensure that poverty is eradicated at the bottom of our supply chain. It's nothing. It's absolutely nothing. And I'm not just saying tomatoes. The cost to us for doubling the wages of all tomato pickers is about 44 cents per family of four. It's nothing.
Yes. Do you think that this is the problem is that Americans just don't know? I mean, we are kind of good at ignoring, you know, what's behind the curtain. When things come into the grocery store, we buy them. We don't stop to think of where they come from even. So I'm not making excuses, but do you think, given the information, the knowledge of the situation, that this will change? Is that what's driving the making of the documentary Food Chains?
That's a great question. And it was really Barry Esterbrook's book, Tomato Land, that taught me that I had no idea where my food came from.
Mm.
And, you know, I studied with an Indian spiritual teacher in New York, Sri Chinmoy, who really helped me to kind of seek truth and justice. And so I was shocked after reading Barry's book that I had no idea where my food came from.
Yes.
And so that's where we made Food Chain. It opens again nationwide on November 21st. It's available for purchase on iTunes right now.
Okay.
And we're just hoping as many people see the film. Our slogan is see the film, join the movement.
Yes.
But you're right. The first step is awareness. So I'd love it if as many people as possible could begin learning about these issues. Because once you know about the problem, it's very easy to take the next steps to ensure that these problems no longer exist.
All right, we're going to take a quick break from my guest, and we'll be right back. Stay with us. We're going to talk about how the film Food Change is already affecting people even before its November 21st release. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. The tagline for one of our favorite indies, how often do you find the right person? The obvious answer is its title, Once. It's the simplest love story imaginable. Boy meets girl, boy and girl fall in love. These two lovers, known only as the guy and the girl, are magnetic. He's a busker who earns a living fixing vacuum cleaners while pouring his heart into writing and singing his songs on the streets of Dublin. She is a Czech immigrant who needs her vacuum repaired. And by the way, she's a piano player who writes and sings her own songs. The characters are lovable and charming. The simple plot lines are unforced. And the ending is emotionally challenging, touching, and believable. And let's not forget the magnificent music. A Grammy Award-winning soundtrack, including Falling Slowly, which won the 2007 Academy Award for Best Original Song. It took years to get this touching little love story filmed, ultimately on a skeleton budget. It has now been adapted into a Broadway musical. Once is an oft-expressed excuse for the creative artist. I'll start to work once this happens or once that happens. Thankfully, once did happen. Feed your heart. Indie Film Minute, not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. My guest today, Sanjay Rawal, who is the director of the feature-length documentary Food Chains, and it examines that the food chain, if you will, the supply chain from the people who actually pick the wine grapes, the tomatoes, the fresh fruits and vegetables, to through the farmer, through the distributor, and up to the people who are making mega millions, the big supermarkets like Publix, Kroger, Safeway, Walmart, and they're making it at the expense of I don't know if we want to, if we can legitimately say it's slave labor because they are being paid, but it's certainly financially abused and sexually abused migrant workers. What's the legal status of a migrant worker who comes here? It's like renting a slave instead of owning one. I know that sounds terrible, but let's call it what it is.
Well, like you said, it's like the word slavery is a loaded word.
Yes.
And you know, while we can't necessarily refer to poor compensation and poor treatment with the word slavery because of its historical context,
yes,
there is a term called modern day slavery, which refers to people that have been trafficked. And in the farm industry, look, the majority of farm workers are treated, if not paid well, they're treated okay.
Mm-hmm.
But the spectrum is so wide that at one end of the spectrum, there's a legitimate chance that a worker's day could be the worst of his or her life.
Yeah.
There's enough prevalence of sexual harassment, of trafficking, that it's entirely possible that a farm worker on any given day might experience something that just drastically changes the course of their life. Yeah, people might say that's true for anybody, but believe me, it's like the possibility exists at a much higher frequency in farm labor. Not because there aren't any laws. I mean, obviously, it's like it's against the law to rape somebody. It's against the law to enslave somebody. But there's no enforcement. That's the thing. You know, there. It's like in a sector that basically, you know, that basically exists in very rural, off the beaten path America, that isn't open to the eyes of the average person, where there's very, very little law enforcement and almost no funding for state or national labor inspectors. People have realized over the last couple hundred years that there's a lot you can get away with.
Mm.
But that's the interesting thing about the Fair Food Program in Florida. These workers created a system that if a farmer's employee gets away with something, that jeopardizes a farmer's relationship with these multi-billion-dollar corporations that really buy all their goods. So it's become a case where workers, for the first time, are encouraged to complain.
Yes.
They're encouraged to nip things in the bud. I mean, it's just a really beautiful partnership, and it's something that really hasn't ever existed in the history of agriculture in the U.S.
It's you know, it's not a new problem, but that doesn't mean we should give up on it, because as you say, there is progress now, and once achieved, there are a number of vendors and businesses and fast food organizations, including McDonald's, who are saying, okay, we agree and we will not buy from farmers who don't. Having said that, going back historically, it didn't even start with Bobby Kennedy in 1968, taking note of the hunger strike. But back in the 30s, when President Franklin D. Roosevelt signed into law Fair Labor Standards Act, I think it was. And
that's correct.
Yes, it rejected child labor. This is 1938, but we got around to it. Rejecting child labor, it limited the number of hours one could work weekly. I think it was 44 hours. And it set a minimum wage for the time, anyway. that was working, but it didn't include farm workers. Can you tell us why, Sanjay, it didn't include farm workers?
You know, in the 30s, when Franklin Delano Roosevelt was trying to pass the New Deal, you know, he had a very complicated relationship with one bloc in the Democratic Party,
yes.
The Southern Democrats,
yes.
The Dixie Crats,
yes.
Who, you know, for whom, you know, this provision to raise the wages and working conditions of farm workers and domestic workers stood in stark contrast to their way of life. These farm workers and domestic workers in the 30s in the South were by far, you know, a majority of them were African American.
Yes.
And so, you know, this was a way to keep the institution of racism alive in the South. The Dixiecrats refused to support the Fair Labor Standards Act unless there was a provision that excluded farm workers and domestic workers. And it's taken a long time for us to separate the racism that has been historically prevalent in farm work with the practical realities of being a democratic nation.
Yes.
Farm workers don't have a lobby. I mean, that's the thing. It's like we've seen the deadlocked legislatures all across the U.S., not to mention Congress.
Yes.
There's no hope for farm workers to really petition government to update laws to increase enforcement. In fact, the USDA issued a $29 million grant for farm worker housing across the U.S., but $29 million to build new farm worker housing, it sounds like a great thing, but that will impact a couple thousand people.
Yes.
You know, it's nothing out of a farm workforce of, you know, anywhere between 1 and 2 million people. There's always been an issue in this country of creating and enforcing legislation for people that are weak and poor. Mm-hmm. And farm workers have historically, except in very brief periods, like when Dolores Huerta and Cesar Chavez, you know, raised the UFW from infancy to a really, you know, strong organization. There have been very few periods in this country where farm workers have been able to achieve lasting change to legislation. And that really was primarily by the UFW and primarily in California.
Yes. And in California, even, as you say, that's a progressive state. In California and in other places, people are willing to have fundraisers and charity functions and raise money to give charity to farm workers and others. But really, that's not, I don't get the impression that, not just from your documentary that makes it very clear, but it isn't charity they're looking for. It's not a once a year financial gift. They want a livable wage. They want to earn.
It's a great point. I mean, we have a tendency in this country, and firstly, I should add that I will support anyone who is raising money for farm worker charities. It's a noble thing.
Yes.
But there's a tendency on the whole in this country, not specifically to farm worker charities, but on the whole, to be distrustful of poor people with money.
Yes.
It's as if we think that if someone's poor and we give them any little extra money, well, they're going to spend it on cigarettes and alcohol. And so there's this argument against raising wages and keeping people dependent on a cycle of charity. There's no farm worker that I've ever spoken to that wouldn't rather make their own health care decisions, that wouldn't rather make their own child care decisions, that wouldn't rather go buy their own darn Thanksgiving turkey rather than get
sure.
one from a company like Publix that hands out turkeys on Thanksgiving rather than helping to subsidize a living wage for farm workers. Mm. So it's like, can we trust a poor person with a little extra money, especially if they've earned it?
Yes.
Well, yes. I mean, that's the only way for them to be raised out of their poverty. Poverty is not a permanent condition, and poverty is not a personality defect. Poverty is something that should not exist in this country, and it certainly shouldn't exist in an industry where there's billions of dollars made by people at the very top of the chain.
Exactly. And I also, I don't think poverty should exist, to paraphrase the president. When someone is working a full 48 hours a week, and of course these farm workers, these migrants work a lot more than that, but when you're working those kind of hours and that kind of heavy labor and, you know, back-breaking, I say that with some degree of knowledge. When my father, father's family owned an enormous farm, and a lot of people worked for them, and I hope they were all treated well. My mother's family, on the other hand, came from historically sharecroppers, so they were at the other extreme. And so I know something of one of my first girlfriends. In order to date her, I had to, her father said I had to help the family harvest the tobacco. So I learned how to climb up into the barn and hang the tobacco, or she wasn't free to go out with me. So I have some little experience with farming, although
it's a great story, by the way, Marcello.
Yes, true story. Even though I'm a New York guy, I do get this. I think what I felt so painfully so in watching your film, Food Chains, is that I lived in Florida, in West Palm Beach, very different kind of place, and I just had no idea. So I was watching it going, holy smoke. If I didn't know, there must be many who don't know, and this film is helping us to know. These are not homeless bums. They're people who come here because they're told they can make money working, and they're willing to work. How does this film, a part of the Clinton Global Initiative, what's that connection and NAFTA, for that matter, which is also a Clinton project?
Well, you know, with regard to NAFTA, there was, you know, a kind of a wholesale migration of people from Mexico, from the agrarian farming industry, after the bottom fell out of their agricultural market after NAFTA.
Yes.
So we saw in the U.S. a tripling of the Mexican-born population, largely undocumented, and the majority of those workers went into the field.
Yes.
So it's only been the last 15 years or so, 20 years, that the majority of workers in fields in the United States were undocumented. But yet the abuse has always existed. So Eva Longoria, our executive producer, is always quick to say, this is a human rights issue. It's not an immigration issue.
Yes.
The worst abuses don't discriminate on legal status. You know, someone is not going to ask a worker if they're a U.S. citizen before trafficking them. And we've seen a lot of U.S. citizens trafficked in agriculture.
Yes.
But that's that. The CIW's program has eradicated modern-day slavery from the tomato field in an area that used to be called ground zero for modern-day slavery. They've drastically reduced sexual harassment. And so President Clinton, through the Clinton Foundation and the Clinton Global Initiative, and Secretary Clinton and Chelsea Clinton, gave the Coalition of Immokalee Workers their annual Clinton Global Citizens Award, along with Leonardo DiCaprio, this September in New York City.
Yes.
Secretary Clinton had known of the CIW for many years through one of the founders, Laura Cimino, and her work against trafficking. But it was probably the first time that farm workers were recognized at that level at a gala reception in New York City where the Roots play that was hosted by Seth Meyers. It's like, it's great to see this issue hit mainstream and hit the big time.
Yes. Yes. And this and your film certainly is going to be a part of that mainstream. It's you know, the old cliche, a picture's worth a thousand words. This documentary is bound to have an impact. I have to believe I've seen Americans and how they respond when their eyes are open to a situation. So I have very high hopes for the film, but it's already having an impact even before it's released. How is that? Is that
we've been amazed, Marcello, at the reception that people have had towards the film. I mean, it's really an issue that begins to hit home.
Yes.
When you see the conditions under which these workers, you know, toil. But at the same time, when you see that there's a solution that exists,
yes.
So these large corporations like Publix and Safeway and Kroger that we trust are denying the existence of the solution. But again, the third part, is it something that we can change? You know, consumer power is real.
Yes.
And supermarkets depend on us for their profit.
Absolutely.
And we've seen that the companies that have signed on to the Fair Food Program have done so by listening to their consumers.
Yes.
This is an American issue. It's an American problem. And the solution of using the market, you know, the American market, to solve this for workers in America is something that I think, you know, crosses all political boundaries. I'm hoping that the reception continues. You know, we care about people seeing the film because it's important for the issue. Like you said, it's like once you see it, it's hard to go back.
It really is. You cannot go back. You cannot ignore it. And I would like to speak to that point of view about American consumers and their power. I'd like to remind all of our listeners that I believe it was in the late 70s when suddenly the beef industry raised the prices without warning, and before internet was the thing. This was just housewives and family, heads of family just decided, okay, we're going to buy chicken instead. And the prices of beef rolled back within weeks. So the American consumer is a powerful determining factor on what policy is, whether they go vote, and how they buy and what they buy. And so where can they look, for instance, to know who's on board with the campaign for fair food and buy from them as opposed to other places like Publix and Kroger? How do we?
That's a great question. If you go to our film website, which is foodchainsfilm.com, we actually have an interactive map where you can, you know, it will select your location and let you know all the participating retailers around you and all the retailers that aren't participating with a click of a button.
Wow.
You can know the 10 or 15 different places around you where you can, just by shopping at, you can support the CIW and fair treatment for farm workers in Florida.
And I certainly don't minimize that point, as farm workers in Florida who have started this campaign with the hunger strike and accomplished so much. But let's not forget that this is not just a problem for one city or one state. I think it's mentioned in your film that 25 cents is the cost of labor to produce a $40 bottle of wine. Now, you have to understand the significance of that. But in addition to that, you know, history sort of repeated itself. We enslaved Native Americans and then black people. But the piece I'd like to talk about, I don't think we've touched on, is that one other thing that has repeated itself in Ferguson and other places is that when people protest, when people speak up, which is why these migrant farm workers have been afraid about speaking up, is that the police, the authorities, protect the corporations from the people who are just saying, you know, we just want some kind of human right of financial equity in some way. What has been the experience for the CIW with police response? I know they've been, the protesters have been nonviolent, but they were told they couldn't go near or try to speak to the spokesman of Publix or the police would intervene?
Well, in my experience with the CIW, they've always had a really good relationship with law enforcement.
Good.
They actually helped the FBI and local law enforcement to find cases of human trafficking in agriculture, but it speaks to a larger issue. It's not so much that police have jurisdiction over enforcing laws in the field;
uh-huh.
It's other authorities, and it's the same issue that you speak about regarding Ferguson. The authorities that have jurisdiction over enforcing laws in the field are either absent or they are not on the worker side. In some states, you see that manifested as a sheriff's department.
Mm-hmm.
In some states, it's labor inspectors. Or in the case of Florida, for example, they abolished their state department of labor.
Oh,
so they took away the one authority that farm workers could look to for help, that any worker could look to for help. So it's like they're kind of not necessarily perpetuating a police state, but it's the obverse and reverse of the same coin.
Mm.
Where they're like Ferguson, they're taking away the ability of a worker to engage with the authority that could help to enforce the law.
Yes.
I just saw in Ferguson, there was no communication with the cops, and so the cops couldn't enforce a standard of decency within their own department.
Mm.
In a very egregious sense. In the field, it's the same way. There's no justice. There's no way for a worker to really efficiently find justice.
Well, we're going to have to close, but I do want to say that even though Sanjay and I have discussed a the challenges that are decades old, and the unfairness and the inequality and the lack of human rights for all human beings. I love that sign that the CIW carries during the hunger strike, etc., nonviolent, creative nonviolent activities, that says, I'm human too. And that's really all they're trying to say. You know, you're a human, and I'm working to feed you, but I'm a human too. And I think that is the uplifting, inspirational message. And now that we know we need to do something about it, we should mention Forrest Whitaker narrates the documentary Food Chains, and Eva Longoria and Eric Schlosser are executive producers. And I've been speaking to Sanjay Rawal, the director of Food Chains, the movie. Any last hopeful thought for us, Sanjay, before we go?
I'm just grateful that there's people like you that care about these issues, Marcelo, and I'm really looking forward to people's thoughts after the film. You can engage with us directly on Twitter at Food Chains Film, or on Facebook, facebook.com/foodchainsfilm. We're always eager to continue the dialogue and to talk with people on any level about this stuff.
And tell us one more time that website where we can see the map of who's involved and agreeing with the Campaign for Fair Food program.
So if you go to www.foodchainsfilm, you can find the interactive map that will tell you which stores are supporting the Fair Food Program. And you can also find out information about where the film is playing. It is starting the 21st of November. It's playing in about 25 cities, and it's actually available for pre-order on iTunes right now.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Sanjay. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, and the information, the education, invaluable.
We're all going with all mine, Marcelo. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye now, and all the best, of course.
Thank you.
Stay with us, as we'll be right back with a final comment from The Reasonable Voice.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Hollywood movies work because they push buttons that create predictable emotional reactions. Today's film is a polished production from Mexico and pushes many of the same buttons. Under the Same Moon is about the human consequence of inequity. It is set in the world of illegal aliens under the constant fear of capture. Rosario has become an illegal immigrant in L.A. to support her son, Carlito, who has remained with Grandma in Mexico. When Grandma dies, Carlito, now 10 years old, decides to smuggle himself across the border to search for his mother. Carlito and Rosario have always talked on the phone every Sunday, and she has carefully described to him the little phone booth she regularly uses for the call. His only hope for finding her is to find that phone booth before Sunday. He knows that once she finds out he is missing, she may never return to the same booth, and he would never find her. His journey is a tense one, rich in character development, detail, and danger. There are many gritty and troubling films set in the world of the illegal alien. Under the Same Moon provides us with a touching opportunity to consider the whole subject in the context of a richly entertaining film. Indie Film Minute, not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, thanking you for joining us and becoming one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. To you who inherit the earth. Now, you who inherit the wind, coal, ash, water, fired up earth, no burying heads in sand, hearts in partying, nor minds in oblivious whining. For in lost elections, there is liberal education to recapture the essence of citizenship, civility, and creative economic opportunity. Free at last, free at last. Thank conservative dollars almighty, President Barack Obama is free at last to be all we, voting yes we can believers, hoped he'd change us into being. You, who will inherit the earth, can be forgiven for thinking Obama could change American politics and even save the world single-handedly, for thanks to us, so did he. From Chicago's Grant Park, November 4th, 2008, when we cried tears of joy with Oprah until Happy Days Are Here Again faded under the residue of the Mushroom Cloud Administration, with conservative Republicans delivering us unto recession and Wall Street unto too big to jail. Why, Millennium Generation? You inherit the earth from baby boomers without the I have a dream wisdom of Thoreau. If you build castles in the air, your work need not be lost. That is where they should be. Now put the foundations under them. Instead, in part due to I got this, we self-satisfied that electing a different-looking president guaranteed a different-looking results, went home. If you are under 40 years old, you are going to inherit the earth we allow the old, white, predominantly male bonus-laden Wall Street CEOs and their congressional puppets leave us. Now, before 140 character attention vapors evaporate or irresistible Instagram urges plow us under new butt cheeks discussion, let's consider this. Whether a peaceful hands-on protester or police state racist, a 20-something voter or political coaster, a misinformed or uninformed 30s open carry right-wing nutcase, or Nader Gator Green Energy part-time park tent occupier, you will inherit the earth the Koch brothers and Kochheads like Mitch McConnell, Sheldon Adelson, John Boehner, Karl Rove, Ted Cruz, pork slicer Joni Ernst, and pig torturer Chris Christie bequeath you, unless we expose and repudiate such earthly inheritance and vote globally. When limiting individual focus to only personal issues like the all-important student loans or net neutrality, you may inherit the earth left behind by Attorneys General Alberto Gonzalez and Eric Holder's DOJ designated too big to fail, unless we become a part of a conversation broader than the latest bar or sports score. Whether we acknowledge or not the impact on us by ISIS beheadings, our tax dollars bombing, military and campus rape, school shootings acceptance, hazing and pledging deaths, reality show of fixable gender and racial inequities in our income and prison ratios, without our electoral attention, you will inherit an earth starved of essential equity, blotted out by food, environment, and even jobs that kill more people born after 1974 faster than birth rate before Watergate. Being redirected by pocket-lined Republicans killing Obama's jobs bill, or oil-soaked Keystone Pipeline sod, or not knowing whether you call it Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, it's the insurance company's economy, stupid. You will inherit a TPP corporatism-scorched earth without single-payer, Medicare for all, extended Medicaid, but with overcrowded emergency room panic. If we can't hyperlink our Ellis Island past and Statue of Liberty inheritance with our immigration versus deportation future, if social devices prevent critical thinking, then those under 30 inherit an earth of melting icebergs, fossil fuel emissions, and top-heavy economic imbalance, instead of a freed from the shackles of corporate obstruction and conservative gridlock, though neither saint nor messiah, Obama, a chess player finally free with our help to make his game changer moves for the Z boomlets who inherit the earth. Join us. Become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Thank you.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of thereasonablevoice.com website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I am Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.